At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL. Welcome in to the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo back here with Sam Monson. Of course, hello to our YouTube friends over there. Appreciate all of the YouTube views of our newly recorded podcast. And of course, appreciate everybody listening on Podcast One, wherever you're listening. How's it going, man?
Going good. You?
Great. Excellent. You're excited for another weekend of football, aren't you?
Yeah.
Thursday night football. I'm going to let you do the prediction this time. Okay. I said Kirk Cousins was going to get killed last week, and that was an exciting game. Like, I kind of had it half right. Kirk Cousins survived, played really well.
Yeah.
So I'm going to let you do the prediction. Thursday night football. It's already happened by the time you're listening to this, but what happened in the Colts-Patriots game from the future, Sam?
The Colts-Patriots game that happened was a glorious event.
Yeah, glorious.
Tom Brady, rejuvenated by the return of Julian Edelman, was magnificent.
Was he?
He was absolutely phenomenal. Led the Patriots to 30-plus points, all kinds of yardage against this Colts defense that's very much bend but not break. Tom Brady broke them.
Bend and break.
The captain, Andrew Luck, almost executed a comeback but ultimately fell short in a valiant, glorious ball of flames.
Shoot, do you have a pre-read for this?
Oh, I have a pre-read. Okay. The captain, Andrew Luck, is here and ready. And you will appreciate this as a New Englander?
As
a man. Yeah, there you go.
New Englander.
A man that hails from Boston. Or at least, you know, in that vicinity.
The suburbs.
Yes. So, cue the music. Dearest mother, we've reached the outskirts of Boston. Our unit tracked the Patriot men by the smell of baked beans and their unique, almost always shouting, dialect. Tomorrow night we battle. For now, I shall take some squirrel oil and then target practice. Andrew.
The baked bean thing, it's not really a thing. Like, the seafood. Should have focused on the seafood. Maybe.
Yeah. He has kind of nailed the almost always shouting.
Yeah, we're loud.
Yeah.
Definitely loud.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my family parties, it's a lot of people screaming at each other.
Yeah.
Angrily. They're angry about stuff they shouldn't be angry about. So, yeah, you nailed it. So, that's the captain. Good predictions for
Of course, that was the captain from the past talking about a game that's happened.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens after he faces the
Patriot. This whole time-traveling thing is awkward. We're going to have to get a timeline sorted to do this.
We've been good at it so far.
Okay.
So we'll see what happens. Let's get into the games looking forward now on Sunday. We're going to start with our marquee matchup of the week, and I think there's only one place to go. It's the Patrick Mahomes show, Showtime Mahomes against the Jacksonville Jaguars defense. Sam, what are we looking at here?
Yeah, well, that's obviously the kind of key marquee matchup, right? Patrick Mahomes was slowed down vaguely by the Denver Broncos and still looked pretty fantastic, still ended up getting it done by the end. The Jags' defense is fantastic, particularly the front. the coverage has been less than stellar this season compared to last year anyway. So that's the big kind of impact area. How does that defense slow down Mahomes? How do they slow down Kelsey, Tyreek Hill as well? I'm kind of intrigued by the other side of the ball, though, because that's what makes the Chiefs such a fascinating watch this season, is that every game is going to be like this. It's going to be, A, can they slow down Mahomes at all? And B, like, how much can that Chiefs defense turn average-looking offenses into fantastic-looking units? You know, the Jags have some weapons on their side of the ball, and they're going up against the Chiefs defense. So can Blake Bortles sustain this, you know, sham of looking like a half-decent quarterback for a while? Going up against that Chiefs secondary, I think he probably can.
Because he's bad.
Yeah.
Chiefs have the lowest coverage grade
in
the NFL. 41.3. Monday Night Football against Denver was their best game so far. Why would you pivot away from our marquee matchup, though?
That is, I think they're both marquee matchups for different reasons.
Okay. Well, let's focus on the real one. Mahomes and this passing game. You're right. That was his most... It actually wasn't his lowest graded game, but it was his most difficult game statistically, and I thought, you know, some of the throws were tough. I thought Denver did a heck of a job making things difficult. A lot of tight window throws that he had to make, but down the stretch, he was awesome. So this matchup with, you know, Ramsey and Boye and all of the receivers that Kansas City has, Jacksonville's linebackers are extremely fast, so if anybody can match up with the Travis Kelce's of the world, they should be able to. So
yeah, they can.
I'm looking forward to that. Why can't they?
Huh? They're not good enough.
Why?
Because Kelce's really good.
Well, I know he's really good. But that's going to be, that side of the ball is going to be outstanding. And now I get what you're saying. Bortles in this offense, he's done a nice job of just short passing game, creating stuff after the catch, making the necessary downfield throws when they're available. And there should be some available against the Chiefs.
There will be, yeah, some available.
How did.
What's kind of interesting, though, is that D4, Justin Houston, and Chris Jones are all three of them playing quite well. I mean, at least one out of that three makes sense, right? Chris Jones is a really good player. Justin Houston makes some more sense because we know he's a phenomenal player when he's healthy. It's just a case of how much has he got left after all these injuries. The D Ford thing, I don't get at all. I mean, he's been a bad player, and like actual bad. Bad that even you might, you know, agree with it. He's suddenly playing well and actually rushing the passer. I think he's got like the third most total pressures of anybody in the league so far. Yeah.
By far, his career high grade of 79.8. His previous career high was 63.5 in 2016. That was when he had 12 sacks. Has never had more than 4 sacks in a season other than that 2016 year, if you're just using sacks. But that was by far his highest pressures too, 54.
Yeah, but he's already got like 20 or something,
23
right?
Pressures, yeah. Yep. So, yeah, playing much better. Even his grade against the run is good.
Yeah, he's playing legitimately well, and it keeps going. I've already, you know, that we predicted the Ryan Fitzpatrick thing falling to pieces. D Ford is another guy who you would have expected that at some point the wheels are going to fall off that wagon. Hasn't yet.
Is this making the point that Eric and George like to make over on the forecast, that it's all about coverage, my friends, because the Chiefs have the number 6 pass rush grade as a team, but the last coverage grade, dead last. And ultimately, you can rush the passer well and still give up yardage because coverage is the last line of defense.
Absolutely. Unless you actually sack the quarterback, the ball can still get to a dangerous place.
What are your thoughts on the Chiefs offensively now, going back to that matchup? How do you think they're putting up 30 against this Jags defense, or is this the time where the Chiefs come back down to earth against the Jacksonville D?
No, I mean, I think this is a team that's going to average 30 plus over the season. So, you know, they may struggle against this defense because it's really good, but they're still going to be definitely over 20. They're going to, you know, 28, the same kind of range they were against Denver. That's about as good, I think, as a team is going to be able to do against this team. Even if the Jags have better personnel across the board than Denver did, I'm not sure they're going to do a better job of it, you know, over the course of the game. So I would imagine they'll be in the 28 to 30 range again.
I think they'll struggle a little bit compared to what they did those first 3 weeks. It might be similar to the Denver game, like you're saying. Patrick Mahomes is becoming this guy that, much like Aaron Rodgers, you have to pick your poison as far as if you actually do want to rush him and let him break contain. Because he did such a good job of breaking contain. Like, if Von Miller got 1 yard upfield on Monday night, he was breaking contain and making plays outside the pocket. So you almost have to just keep that good pad level, compress the pocket, and it's not that he can't win from the pocket, but you just have to make it tighter, right? Make it congested for him and hope he misses a few throws. I mean, that's where he is right now.
This is the thing. We've made this Aaron Rodgers comparison before. Reclaim the comparison, Steve. We're not saying they're the same. We're saying there are things
You're saying
similar.
He's an instant Hall of Famer? He's the best quarterback of all, you know, of all time?
Yeah.
Statistically?
So when you compare him to Aaron Rodgers, the reason that I think you compare the two of them is because I don't know what the game plan should be going up against either of them, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
Rodgers is the same thing. Most quarterbacks, the game plan you want to do is to pressure them because everybody plays worse under pressure. You know, the average quarterback's pass rating drops like 35 points when you pressure them, right, over a long period of time. Sometimes it fluctuates, but generally speaking, you get pressure on the quarterback, his pass rating goes down, that's what you want to do. With Rodgers, though, once you get him outside of the pocket, he is absurd. He makes these incredible throws. It's absolute daggers through the heart of your defense, and that's the last thing you want to let him do. So now you're set in a situation, well, I don't really want to pressure him because if he gets out of the pocket, we're screwed. Mahomes is the same deal, right? The thing he's best at might be that crazy stuff ad-libbing outside of the pocket. So you don't want to do the thing you normally want to do to every other quarterback, but equally he's carving teams up if you just leave him alone quietly in the pocket. So you're back to what is the game plan? Like the Broncos at times in that game, Von Miller wasn't rushing. He like, you know, took two steps off the line and basically just stepped back and took a look at it. Like That's a problem because he's basically taking himself out of the game for serious stretches.
Well, the last 2 weeks, the Chiefs were forced to, and Mahomes was forced to have a little bit more patience, take what was there, and that has been the strategy. He still succeeded, but I think that is going to be the strategy going forward, is make the young second-year quarterback be very patient and continue to just make good decision after good decision. By the way, Mahomes has one turnover-worthy pass this entire season.
Yeah, and that's the problem incredible. With that, right? That was the question mark of his coming out, is can he do that? And so far, the answer is, hell yes, he can.
Should have had his first pick against Denver on Monday night, but it was dropped. Still sitting at 14 touchdowns, no interceptions. Are you taking Kansas City as well?
Yeah.
I think it's close. I think it's a really good game. I'm looking forward to it. A ton of AFC playoff implications, this Chiefs-Jaguars game here in Week 5. All right, we're going to fly through some games and hit on a couple others a little bit deeper, but let's go Falcons at the Steelers, Sam. What are we looking at quickly?
Shootout. Both teams have got really good offenses. Neither team has got a great defense, particularly in coverage. The Falcons have been in a shootout every single game this year. The Steelers have been in a shootout most of their games. A good defense seems to be able to slow that team down at the moment, the way Roethlisberger is playing, but the Falcons are not a good defense, so... both quarterbacks, I think, will have big games. The real question mark for me is Ben Roethlisberger actually going to start playing well at some point?
Yeah, again, a weird thing because he's still making the really good throws, but he's just missing and making bad decisions way more than, first off, more than most other quarterbacks in the NFL and more than he usually does. Mm-hmm. So will he tidy that up? By the way, this is the first game since week one when we were questioning Matt Ryan's arm, the first outdoor game that he's played. Since that point. So he's been in the dome the last 3 weeks tearing it up. Let's see if the...
So he's back to being a bum?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Okay. Throwing at Pittsburgh, just like he was at Philadelphia week one, they scored 12 points and they struggled. Let's see how he does here. Matt Ryan's passer rating of 133 the last 2 weeks in their losses and playing pretty well. What do I want to see? I want to see Julio and Calvin Ridley against these Steelers cornerbacks.
Yeah, that could be horrible.
Joe Hayden, Artie Burns, Mike Hilton in the slot when they move him around. Looks like a Falcons advantage, but again,
yes.
Falcons are a different team in the dome at home. They've played three straight home games, tearing it up offensively. I think they might regress back a little bit, even though they're going up against a rough Pittsburgh back seven.
Yeah.
What do we have pick-wise, though?
I think Pittsburgh.
I did take Pittsburgh.
Atlanta.
And, of course, Big Ben's much different at home, too. So this would be the day he bounces back this week,
okay.
Big Ben. We've got our Dalton Coaster of the Week. Sam, give me your Dalton Coaster of the Week.
Who you're going at? Big Ben.
Well, look, I think Big Ben does bounce back.
Okay.
So he's in there. I'm going to go with a repeat performer, though, Xavien Howard, which is going to lead us into our Dolphins-Bengals analysis. I'll get to yours in a second because yours is the game after that.
Okay.
Let's start with Xavien.
Mm-hmm.
We were on here last week. We talked about it on Monday as well. He can look like Richard Sherman. He could look like a bad corner. Last week, I think it was 3 for 3 into his coverage, 2 touchdowns. Didn't look great. So Xavien Howard going up against the Bengals and little A.J. Green matchup in this one.
Yeah, gave up 73 yards, 2 scores against the Patriots. But the week before that, he was basically shut down. The week before that, The numbers were shut down, but he let, there were some plays on the table that didn't necessarily count. So he's basically been all over the spectrum over the last 3 weeks, from terrible average to really, really good. It, who the hell knows which Xavier Howard is going to turn up this week? A.J. Green gives you that perfect test, because Howard at his best can definitely live with A.J. Green and go one-on-one with him and actually do a good job in a way most corners can't. Anything south of that, and A.J. Green is probably going to destroy him.
You tune into this game because it might be A.J. Green versus Richard Sherman. It might be A.J. Green versus a Richard Sherman type of quarterback like Xavier Howard, cornerback, and or could be a Big 12 corner,
yeah,
like he used to be. I'm also going to keep an eye on this Bengals pass rush, number 5 in the NFL, going up against the Dolphins, who are 19th in pass blocking. Feel like they've played a little over their skis, offensive line-wise, this year.
Over their skis?
Yeah. Right? Is that the phrase?
Yeah.
Little better than they should be. Geno Atkins has 26 pressures. Carlos Dunlap has 14. Carl Lawson has 17. It's a pretty good trio right
there.
It really
is.
We've talked about this a lot this year, and that's why I got the Bengals winning this game. The Dolphins' regression is going to start hitting hard.
We all have the Bengals. Like I said, that was a demoralizing body blow for the Dolphins. Just this, the flying high, thinking they were good, and then, crap. No, it turns out we still suck. The Patriots, even though they're not very good, can just roll in and beat the hell out of us.
Give me your Dalton coaster as it leads us into our next game here.
I'm going to go with Von Miller. I said the week before that Von Miller doesn't have two bad games in a row. Turns out the exception of that is when he has to play Mitchell Schwartz as the second week.
Yes.
Because Mitchell Schwartz has a history of shutting down Von Miller.
He does really well.
Yeah, going one-on-one with him. Now, part of that is helped by the fact that, as I said, there were plays in that game where Von Miller legitimately wasn't rushing. He took a couple of steps and then was basically just watching to see what Mahomes did.
Right.
So he took himself out of the play on some rushes, but Mitchell Schwartz did legitimately go one-on-one with him a lot and shut him down. So that's two bad games in a row for Von Miller, for a guy who doesn't have that many bad games in his career, period. This, the law of averages says he's got to bounce back this week.
So you're watching Vaughn against the Jets. Anything else in this game that's standing out to you?
Yeah, Sam Darnold against that Denver secondary that did do so well against Mahomes. Darnold's week-by-week PFF grade right now goes 67, 59, 44, 37 in sequence.
I thought every player just chronologically gets better.
Yeah, well,
just get better every week.
He's going the other way on a weekly basis.
Yeah, that's not good.
No, so if that trend continues, he'll have a grade in the 20s this week, which would make him Josh Allen.
I'm going to guess he's not going to do that.
Okay.
But, I want to see Darnold start showing some progression. I'm going to keep saying he's young for the rest of the season.
He will remain young for this whole season, really.
Yeah, he will. Mm. He will. He's not going to age all that much. Not more than anyone else, at least.
No, I mean, he'll age, a few months over the course of the season, give or take.
Wow, bold stance there. A hot take from Sam. I want to see on the other side now, Case Keenum regresses back into Case Keenum. That's what he is right now. So at some point, it was a 66.2 overall grade, which is actually not his second best grade of all time, right? Last year was by far his best grade of all time at 81. 2015, we actually had him graded higher than he is right now. So Case Keenum, so far, has regressed back into what we thought he was, and that's why Denver's, I think, in trouble as a team.
He did make some big plays in that game, though, against the Chiefs. There were some plays where he didn't, answer Mahomes in terms of he wasn't living with him, but just when you were like, okay, that's that done, Keenum came out with a big-time throw.
The seam route down I was actually in the middle of tweeting that this doesn't look like what Mahomes just did, and then he makes that incredible throw. He made me look stupid for a throw. But then he missed the potential game winner over Demaryius Thomas. A lot of people blamed Demaryius Thomas for that. I think he missed the throw anyway.
Yeah. It wasn't great, but he did make some throws in there that made you remember that he actually does still have some talent out there, and he's got that ad-libbing streak to him. He made something, I can't remember what the play was, but he made something kind of weird happen that, a quarterback just doesn't typically make. He's got something to him that's still there. And we said all along, last year the whole narrative was, Denver will be fine as long as they get average quarterback play. Now, Trevor Siemian went in the tank and they didn't get anything close to average. But if Keenum can stay somewhere in the average range, they have actually got a shot.
Well, he's the number 26 quarterback in the NFL right now. I think that's close to where we had him in our preseason rankings, not giving him full credit for last season as far as, do it again. Prove it to me one more time. So ultimately, I think Keenum right now is looking like the bridge quarterback that we called him. At least I called him this offseason. You believe in him a little bit more than I do, I think. Everybody's taking Denver except I'm taking the Jets. I'm expecting Darnold to bounce back and buck that trend.
Yeah.
Taking the Jets.
Okay.
At home.
Yes.
At home. Denver's traveling east. Next game, we've got the Baltimore Ravens at the Cleveland Browns. I'm looking at your notes. All it says is Baker.
Well, that's not all it says. That's what it leads off with, Baker.
Every
game,
caps.
Every Browns game from here on in, the first thing I'm going to be watching for is Baker.
In all caps, Baker.
Yeah. He looked good, I thought, against the Raiders. I mean, that was such a weird game. For a start, I have no idea how the game was even close, let alone the Raiders winning it at the end. Like, the Browns should have had that in hand by a mile, but somehow conspired to lose the thing. I really typical Browns game. Like, Baker opened that game 0-for-3 with a pick 6, and all three passes hit his receivers in the hands and were dropped. So I think Baker's better than the statistics showed in that game.
Can I give you the drop stats, since you just mentioned it?
One second. There were some bad plays in that game as well, but Baker was completely undone, in particular by drops. To what extent with the drops, Steve?
Are you ready now?
Yes.
Baker Mayfield's had 14.1% of his passes dropped. Mm-hmm. By far highest in the league. Number two, Carson Wentz at 9.2. So he's 5% higher than number two. He's 7% higher than the fifth highest quarterback in the league, which is Case Keenum. 7% of his passes have been dropped.
Yeah. So a lot of passes dropped for Baker. Kind of undid him. Plus the whole thing with the officials screwing the Browns out of a first down that would have won the game late on. And general madness of somehow Oakland actually coming back. When you look at the overall team grades, like, it's a really crude measure of it doesn't always work that way, that the best graded team wins the game, because points come about by weird one-off plays and all this kind of stuff, right? But it illustrates what I'm talking about, that the Browns played dramatically better than the Raiders and somehow conspired to lose the game. They, on a team level, were significantly better graded on both sides of the ball than the Raiders were.
Yeah, it's not surprising. Just a weird game. I think Browns fans, be optimistic.
Yeah.
That stuff will even out. Matchup-wise, I want to really see Myles Garrett going up against Ronnie Stanley. Myles Garrett's our number 11 graded pass rusher. Ronnie Stanley, number 11 graded pass blocker.
Mm.
So pretty good matchup on the edge there.
11-on-11.
11-on-11. And Myles Garrett, quietly, what was his weakness coming out?
The run game.
Number one graded edge defender against the run. His real weakness, though, according to scouts, was that he played an instrument.
Yeah.
So he was soft.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not good analysis.
No.
Myles Garrett's a really good player, playing really well.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to our biggest.
Who did you choose?
Who did we take?
Oh, we both went Browns.
I think we're both going to just Baker show the rest of the year. The Ravens, a lot of credit for what they did on the road against Pittsburgh last week. Just looked like the better team.
Yeah.
I was surprised by that. I haven't been a Ravens believer for a few years now. That was one of the more impressive. I know the Steelers aren't the same, but I was just impressed by their handling of that game on the road at Pittsburgh. Was not expecting it. Expecting Pittsburgh to bounce back.
They're always kind of better than you think they should be. They're one of those teams that I think, and it probably comes down to coaching, is that they just outperform the way they should be given some of the really bad players they have at times.
I think it's like Harbaugh's had not great rosters over the last couple of years and still had them, you know, mostly competitive. So credit them, but I got the Browns bouncing back this week. Brings us to the biggest mismatch of the week, Sam. What do you have?
The Vikings offensive line against the Philadelphia Eagles defensive line / front. This is a rematch of the NFC Championship game, and just the more you look at it, the more kind of has to go exactly the same way, that the Eagles are just going to get a relentless volume of pressure against that Minnesota Vikings offensive line, and I can't really see any way they overcome that. It's just too hard. Like, in the NFC Championship game, Kirk Cousins was under pressure, Case Keenum, sorry, was under pressure 48% of his dropbacks against the Eagles. That's a monster number. It's basically unmanageable as a quarterback. Through four games, the Vikings have given up 81 total pressures, I think, which is the most in the league by a mile, which is on pace to be the most we've ever seen over a season by a mile, and is just, it's a disaster. Now, okay, the Vikings have played more passing downs than anybody else. They've had a game go, they've tied a game, so they've had a game go all the way through overtime. They've been down in a lot of games, so they've been passing a lot. But even if you look at it on a per passing play basis, they're there with the Cardinals and the Texans as completely unmanageable pass blocking offensive lines. And now they're going up against the best defensive front in football. So, disaster.
I think it's a fair mismatch. Kirk Cousins, 55 grade when under pressure. Big drop off there. His stats aren't bad under pressure, but the grade, you know, still below average. Typical. So it's going to be a key factor there. I also want to see, this is the first time Carson Wentz has gone up against Mike Zimmer's defense, because he didn't obviously play in the NFC Championship last year. And 2 years ago, Carson Wentz's rookie season, this was the game right around this time of year, week five or six, I can't remember exactly when it was, where Carson Wentz went from one of our highest graded quarterbacks early his first few games to just like taking a step. Like, this was the first like welcome to the NFL game for him, going up against that Zimmer defense. Now, I know the Vikings defense is performing horribly right now, but Zimmer still has the double A gap pressure package. I mean, he still has some of the stuff that confused Wentz a couple of years ago. And I kind of want to see how they handle that. It's completely different teams now, but I just want to see this, you know, second matchup, Wentz versus Zimmer.
So the Eagles on defense lead the NFL in total pressures. They already have 103 as a defense. The Kansas City Chiefs, weirdly, are number two.
Do you have your filters right?
Probably. Well, no, I haven't taken it.
I trust you.
Whatever. They're right up there. They have the number two best win percentage in the league, behind only the Rams, who have already played the Vikings offensive line, which is going to help boost that.
It's kind of like the Seahawks O-line boost.
Right. For Aaron Donald, every single year gets two games against the Seahawks.
Which the Rams still have two of.
Yeah. So essentially, you just backs up the point. They're going to face the number one pass rushing unit in the NFL, and that's going to go badly.
So it wouldn't surprise me if Minnesota made this into a really good game. You know, just played up to the competition level and you know, made it a little bit less lopsided than our picks would seem, because we all took the Eagles.
We did.
But I think it'll end up being a pretty good game. Another NFC matchup, Green Bay Packers at the Detroit Lions. What are we watching, Sam?
I'm interested to look at Frank Ragnow. He allowed 13 total pressures in the first two games, was grading like crap, and then, bam, that Patriots game happened, and he hasn't allowed a pressure since. So two games to start the season, 13 total pressures, terrible grade. Two games from that point on, perfect pass protection in those two games.
Yep.
So this is a real test. Now, was that just a case of finding a couple of teams that are relatively weak on the inside, the Patriots with their big bodies that don't really rush the passer, and the Cowboys just with, you know, guys you've never heard of on the inside of their defensive line?
I mean, that was two of the worst interior pass rushing teams in the NFL.
Yeah, so it's an asterisk at least, right? Now he goes up against the Packers, who have at least one of their sort of trio of dominant defensive linemen down, but Kenny Clark should be there. Mike Daniel should be there. That's two really formidable defensive linemen he's going to have to block.
Plus Mike Pettine's scheme, you know, a little bit of confusion in the front, and, you know, they do a lot of different things.
So, you know, it's difficult. We don't know yet. Was that a case of he just got some more favorable opposition, or has he actually turned a corner?
Yeah, so I want to see the other side of the ball. Aaron Rodgers, see if he can get back on track against the Lions. Generally plays well, you know, at Detroit. And then the Devontae Adams, Darius Slay.
That's assuming Adams plays. He picked up a calf injury. So the Packers could be down to their three rookie wide receivers.
That's why they drafted all those guys.
Yeah, because Allison and Randall Cobb are also already down. So literally their only healthy receivers right now are the three rookies, I believe.
It's an interesting situation in Green Bay, where it's always been the offense carrying the defense, and the defense has put themselves in position to mitigate things if, you know, when the offense has injuries, has one-legged Aaron Rodgers, or has Aaron Rodgers have a not very good game last week against the Buffalo Bills, the defense is finding a way to get it done. If Devontae plays, or whoever's out there, always like watching Darius Slay, only giving up a passer rating of 56.8 into his coverage so far this year. We're all taking Green Bay, except for Neil, who continues to go rogue on a couple picks every single week. He's taking the Lions. This could be the game where the Lions, they fall to 1-4, and then they start flipping players. They start trading Golden Tate, and, you know,
You are desperate to get Golden Tate on the Patriots roster, however you can manage
to
make
that
happen.
We just did our little exercise as far as trades that we would like to see.
Yeah.
and I had the Jaguars, and I said Golden Tate in his last year of the contract. Yeah, I just think he's a perfect candidate once the Lions fall out of this playoff picture.
You're just desperate to get him out of Detroit for some reason.
I am not. Anyway, just I think it makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
Quick break to tell you about our friends over at Simply Safe. Sam, you've already installed this thing into your home because it's pretty awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's pretty idiot-proof, which is always handy because, you know, never underestimate an idiot. But it all installs simply. The whole thing, like, attaches to your wall with, like, double-sided sticky tape, essentially. You don't have to screw anything in. You just plug it all in. The little keypad thing comes off the wall once it's all installed. You just walk around, it pairs with all the devices, and bam, you're like James Bond secure.
James Bond secure. We're big fans of Simply Safe here because Simply Safe is ready for anything that gets thrown at it. If a storm takes out your power, Simply Safe is ready. An intruder cuts your phone line. Hope that doesn't happen, Sam. Simply Safe is ready.
This is what I'm saying, right? That would take down the house in the movies, not you, because you have.
But when you have Simply Safe, you're good. They could destroy your keypad or siren. Simply Safe will still get you the help that you need. Maybe it's overkill. Maybe you don't need to be ready for every worst case scenario, but that's what makes Simply Safe's home security so great. It is always ready, and it doesn't cost a lot. It really doesn't, because it's only $14.99 a month.
Yeah.
I had to double check that. So my old security system was more than double that.
Yes.
And they sent me the Simply Safe, and I was like, there's no way. There's no way it's this cheap. Only $14.99 a month, less than half of what I was just paying. It's 24/7 professional security monitoring, and there's no contracts or hidden fees. So I'm recommending Simply Safe. I don't have to recommend it to you because you already have one. Mm. I'm recommending it to Matt over here, who's producing the show. So get yourself a Simply Safe, Matt. I highly recommend it. I'm recommending it to everybody in YouTube land and in podcast land. So if you go to simplysafe.com/PFF today, that's simplysafe.com/PFF. You can get that special discount, the $14.99 a month. Simplysafe.com/PFF. Go there today to protect your home and family today. All right, let's get into the rest of the games. New York Giants at the Carolina Panthers. We're going rapid fire through the rest of these games. Sam, give me one good matchup to watch.
Will Hernandez versus Kawan Short. Will Hernandez has actually been grading really well. Everybody was talking about Quentin Nelson as this, you know, prodigious superhero guard prospect, the best person to come along since, you know, whatever.
We were too.
Back in the late 50s. But Quentin Nelson's actually been struggling a little bit. Will Hernandez has been the guy that's been grading the best. Now, Kawan Short lines up almost exclusively on the right side of the defensive line, going up against the left guard of the Giants, i.e. Hernandez. So this is going to be as close of a one-on-one matchup as you get on the defensive line on the inside. I mean, that's gonna give you a pretty good litmus test, right, of how good Hernandez is. Litmus test, by the way, for the old listeners of the podcast. That'll ring some bells.
Oh, yeah, good old science class back in the day. Giants-Panthers doesn't look like the best matchup on paper, but when you look at that particular one-on-one player matchup, and then I'm going to go Luke Kuechly against Saquon Barkley.
Ooh.
In the pass game, in the run game.
If there's a guy that can live with Saquon Barkley in space.
It's Luke.
Right.
So this is not one of those games where I'm just like, man, I can't, on the surface, can't wait to watch it. But when you're talking about just individual matchups to watch, this might be as good as it gets this week. So I want to see one of the best league's best coverage linebackers in Kuechly against Saquon, who does move extremely well in space. We joke about his, you know, lack of value, but he still has those special movement skills, and he's dangerous mm-hmm. with the ball in his hand. So I want to check that out. Where are we going pick-wise?
Carolina.
Neil goes rogue again. He's taking the Giants. Giants fans keep complimenting him because he keeps taking the Giants, I guess. So he's going down with the ship. Tennessee Titans at the Buffalo Bills. What are we watching?
This Titans defense, which appears to actually be quite good, going up against Buffalo's offense, which appears to be really quite bad. Josh Allen last week had an overall PFF grade of 28.
It's not good.
It's really not.
Out of 100.
Yeah, 28 out of 100.
He had one of those.
About way back in primary school, I did Latin for 2 years. The first year of Latin, I got 42%, and the second year of Latin, I got 27%. And that was basically at the point where you only had to do it for 2 years and you could drop it and, you know, do a proper subject. So for the entire second year, it was basically like, well, I'm never going to need this for the rest of my life. I'm basically not listening to you. I'm going to sit here and, you know, read whatever.
You're comparing your mailed-in Latin grade to Josh Allen.
That's as well as Josh Allen graded in this game last week. It was as if he hadn't shown up for the entire year, rolled into an exam, and they asked him a question in Latin, and he didn't have any idea what they were talking about.
I have nothing to add to that.
That's what it was.
I'll be watching. Mm-hmm. It's a great analogy.
Thank you.
Jerry Hughes and Taylor Lewan on the other side. Jerry Hughes, number 4 pass rushing grade. One of the few guys getting after the quarterback for the Buffalo Bills. And then Taylor Lewan, he's number 39 as a pass blocker right now, but we got 4 or 5 years track record of him being really good as a pass protector. So Hughes versus Lewan. And I think we're all taking Tennessee in this one.
And Hughes is coming off like the 2-game stretch. Talk about the roller coaster. He got, 13 pressures against Riley Reiff, which is, I think, one of the highest 10 pressure totals we've ever seen in a single game. Then I think he basically got shut down by David Bakhtiari.
Right.
I haven't checked what it is, but it was like one pressure or something. So almost completely shut down versus one of the top 10 pressure totals we've ever seen. Where does that go against Taylor?
And Lewan's not as good as Bakhtiari, but better than Reiff. He's in between those two.
So it could be anywhere.
Brings up that old Robert Quinn deal. When Robert Quinn would have like a 12 pressure game back in 2013 and they get shut down by Joe Staley. But there's value in the domination because, the Bills won that game.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're all taking the Tennessee Titans here. I can't believe I haven't mentioned the Corey Davis breakout Hall of Fame game from last week, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
You ready?
No.
The quest to 1,000 receptions continues.
What's he at now? What's the tally?
I don't know. Probably 40.
40?
Probably 40 or 50.
That high? Let's have a look.
Look it up while we move on to the next game.
You wax lyrical about Corey Davis.
Corey Davis, great route runner.
He's actually God.
Big play threat, contested catch. He can do it all. He can win everywhere. If Mariota could just get him the ball, he'll get to his 1,200 total receptions is probably where he'll need to be by the end of it.
1,200.
I just added 200. For those of you who don't know, back before the draft in 2017, we had to make a very bold prediction about the draft, and I said Corey Davis will be top 10 all-time in receptions by the time it's all said and done. He got off to a slow start last year, but where are we at right now, Sam?
We're flying. Over 2 years, he's got 56 total receptions.
So there you go. We're moving right now.
Right.
That's 3 weeks of Michael Thomas.
One touchdown. In 2 years.
I did not make a prediction about touchdowns.
You didn't. That's true.
I did not. And he had a couple touchdowns in the playoff game. That doesn't count against New England.
You're right.
Touchdowns
it doesn't
in the
count.
Playoff game.
It also doesn't count for his career total. You can't count those.
I said receptions. Top 10 all time. He's moving now. All right. Oakland Raiders at the Los Angeles Chargers. What are you watching now, Sam?
The Raiders against the Chargers. Oh, Brandon Parker, right tackle. Donald Penn is down. He's on IR because he had to change sides of the line. And that's tough on the groin, Steve. You've got to reverse everything you've done for the last 15 years. Apparently, that's way harder than you think it is.
Are you mocking our friends?
A little bit. It's going to tear your groin. So Donald Penn is down. Brandon Parker came in, halfway through that game against the Browns. And just in that game, in the 39 pass blocking snaps he played, he gave up 2 sacks and 4 total pressures. So I'm curious to see how that's going to work going up against the Chargers, who do have some edge rush.
Yeah. Okay. Donald Penn. Poor guy. I'm looking at the something's got to give here, Bowl. Chargers have the second worst pass blocking unit.
Oh, it's terrible.
And the Raiders have the worst pass rush in the NFL.
Even
Maurice
worse.
Hurst showed signs of life last week.
Yeah.
With his highest graded game by a wide margin. So something's got to give. Chargers pass blocking is either going to have their best game against a bad Raiders pass rush, or the Raiders are finally going to start getting some pressure.
So it's interesting, right? At the top end, at the other end of that scale, really good pass blockers typically shut down really good pass rushers. On the other end of the scale, I think it works the opposite, that terrible pass rushers will still get pressure against terrible pass blockers.
Those Colts Texans last week, we talked about that.
Yeah.
Colts don't have a great defensive front.
And
they
still got a pretty decent, healthy amount of pressure against the Texans.
I think we're all taking the Chargers in this one. Yes.
Yep.
Consensus across the board here. Arizona Cardinals at the San Francisco 49ers. Give our guys something to watch here.
Rosen. Rosen in week 2. I was really impressed with him in week 1, and he was under pressure about as much as we said he would be going into that game. It just didn't matter. He still played incredibly in the face of all that pressure. That typically is not sustainable. We've talked about this endlessly. You just can't play under that volume of pressure for any kind of consistent period of time. So what happens in week two? Do we see another good performance from Rosen? Does it go completely south the way it has with Sam Darnold a little bit because he's going to be under so much pressure? I think that's worth watching.
Rosen, absolutely the thing to watch with the Arizona Cardinals, because the rest of that roster is struggling right now. I do want to see, this is another something's got to give here, right? Cardinals have the fourth worst pass rushing unit going up against the Niners, who have the third worst pass blocking unit. So another one of those fun matchups to watch, Sam. And also just Patrick Peterson in general. I think there was a point in his career where we said, look, he's great at man coverage. You put him in a zone scheme, he's a little inconsistent, but he's been really good in this new scheme that's a little bit more zone heavy, playing more off coverage. He's only given up 7 receptions all season for only 54 yards. So Patrick Peterson's still worth watching. Is he a guy that you think might have any trade value? Not to play, you know, Major League Baseball here where there's a lot more star trades or whatever, but if Arizona's really got no shot,
yeah,
do they go full rebuild? And is Patrick Peterson a guy, like if the Chiefs, like what if the Chiefs,
right,
with their disaster in the secondary, started looking at Patrick Peterson?
That would be, I mean, it's going to cost them to do it.
Sure.
In terms of, certainly in terms of trade collateral and then the contract. But yeah, that they could desperately use a guy like Patrick Peterson. I thought the Earl Thomas thing to Kansas City actually made a lot of sense before Thomas broke his leg.
Right.
And the way in which he broke his leg apparently is putting him out long enough that it's not worth doing.
Right.
Like if they were, even if he had broken his leg, if they were able to get him back in like 6 weeks' time, it may be worth it for them. This is a team that, you know, expects to be playing in the playoffs.
Oh, that would be worth
and
it.
A guy like Earl Thomas could transform that pass defense on his own. So it might have been worth rolling the dice at that point. But Patrick Peterson would make a ton of sense. And for the Cardinals, they would get, it's got to be a first-round pick, right? You're not taking anything less for Patrick Peterson. So they get a first-round pick out of it. Plus, they actually save money on the salary cap by getting his contract off the books. I mean, it's teams, I think, are very reluctant to basically just hold up the white flag and say we're bailing on this year, which is what that is, right? If you trade away your best player, you're basically saying,
oh, yeah,
yeah, we're done.
Well, I'll be watching some Peterson because he's been playing extremely well, and our grading is backing up number two corner so far. This is a mixed bag. We've got, I'm taking the Niners. You're taking
same.
The Niners.
Yeah.
And there's a couple other people taking Arizona. All right. Staying in the same division, we've got the Los Angeles Rams at the Seattle Seahawks. What are you watching for in this one?
So I was torn on how to pick this game. Obviously, the Rams are the best team in football right now, and the Seahawks very much aren't. But it's a division game. It's in Seattle, where they are a legitimately different team. And I don't really know how it's going to go, right? But the problem is, I don't think it's going to be one of two things. Either the Rams are going to roll up there and just stomp the living life essence out of the Seahawks and essentially obliterate what's left of that franchise, or Seattle are somehow going to recapture that 12 magic and home field advantage and all this kind of stuff, and they're actually going to find a way to at the very least keep it close and low scoring and potentially even steal a win. If you look at the two games last season, that's exactly what happened. One of them was a blowout. It was 40-something points to not very much for the Rams, and the other one was really close. It was a low-scoring affair that I think the Seahawks won. So now the Rams are better this year than they were a year ago, but I kind of think it's going to be the same thing. Either the Rams are going to get, or the Seahawks are going to get absolutely murdered, or they're somehow going to find a way to, you know, recapture some of the old magic.
So I think it's going to be something in between. That's
the one thing it's not going to be.
So here's what because I think it ends up being a shootout.
No.
So listen, with Russell Wilson's going to be the X factor with Seattle. Mm-hmm. The supporting cast is by far the worst that he's ever had, from O-line to the defense, like all the entire team. And Russell Wilson, when they had that great supporting cast, would have a ton of games where they scored 10 points and 15 points and 16 points, and they still found a way to win with that great defense. If he does that every now and again, that's going to happen. He's going to be a disaster. But when he plays great, and you combined it with the old supporting cast, you had dominant Seattle. Now when he plays great, there were games last year where they lost to the Falcons 34-31 at home. They lost to the Redskins at home. They beat Houston 41-38. They're now this team that even if Russell Wilson plays great, he can only carry them so far. And then it comes down to a few plays and it's sketchy. I think it's closer to that. I think Russell Wilson plays one of his really good games, but because everybody else around him, the O-line, the defense, they just can't keep up with the Rams. The Rams are just too good. I don't care where it is.
Random addition to this game, Bobby Wagner has turned into like a tackling machine. He's missed three tackles in the last year and a half, and all three of those came after he injured himself and he was playing hurt for three games.
Late last year.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was perfect all last season. Then he injured himself, had to play hurt for a few games, and missed three tackles in like two games. This season, he's yet to miss a tackle. So he's sort of reset the standard. Remember, Takeo Spikes used to be the guy that just never missed tackles. He missed like three in a couple
of
years.
But he didn't have the type of range that Wagner has.
No, yet, but even but. So, like just in terms of pure tackling ability,
right?
Like,
he didn't.
Takeo Spikes barely ever missed, but he was missing like, you know, five single digits every single year. Bobby Wagner's missed three in his last 170 something attempts. That's insane.
Oh, absolutely! It's incredible. Also, want to watch Goff on the road. Goff's our highest graded quarterback right now, leading the league in big time throws. Coming off of by far the best two-game stretch of his career.
System quarterback.
Yeah, just a system guy. Last game. It's Sunday Night Football. Last game for us to cover here. We got stuff falling. I'm going to try to save it. Okay. Dallas Cowboys at the Houston Texans, Sam.
Yeah, it's always Watson versus his O-line. Pressure. You know, it's the story for Houston all season long. It's the same story for the Minnesota Vikings, only I think Watson is playing better than Kirk Cousins right now, even if the numbers don't necessarily back it up. I think he's better equipped to play under pressure than Kirk Cousins is, just because he's that kind of quarterback, the one that's happier running around. He also, it's pressure percentage is a statistic that gets thrown around kind of directed at the offensive line a lot of the time. Look, the quarterback was under pressure 40-something percent of the time. That offensive line stinks.
We're guilty of it as well.
Yeah, yeah. And we've talked before in the past about how Russell Wilson is one of these quarterbacks where, yes, their offensive line is terrible in Seattle, but Russell Wilson is also to blame for a lot of that pressure. Whether it's bailing from clean pockets and then finding himself under pressure later on, whether it's just holding onto the ball for an age until the pressure comes, you know, the quarterback influences that number a lot. So Deshaun Watson is currently number one in pressure rate in the NFL. He's under pressure 47% of his dropbacks so far this season, which is right up there. Like I said, Case Keenum was under pressure for 48% of his dropbacks in the NFC Championship game, and that's the level of you cannot play under that circumstances. If you're over 45%, it's usually the quarterback is going to have real problems getting anything done. So Watson is under pressure 47% of the time, but he has the slowest average time to throw in the NFL. He's the only quarterback in the league who holds the ball for an average of 3+ seconds. So that's obviously influencing that number a huge amount. So the Texans' offensive line is garbage, Deshaun Watson is stressing them more than a quarterback should or could.
We've got multiple pieces of analysis on Watson on our various channels. We've got a YouTube video where I think Zach Robinson does a great job of explaining why that surprises him, actually. Why the 3 seconds surprises him based off what he was at Clemson. He was a one-read guy at Clemson at times. And then he would take off a little bit too soon. And then the last couple years, he's extended plays a lot more. Mike Renner, as I see in the edit email here, Sam, he just emailed it in. He does a breakdown for the site on Watson and his improved passing at the 10 to 19 yard level. You guys want to check out those numbers at profootballfocus.com. But it's like night and day. The main premise of both of these pieces the last couple days, though, Deshaun Watson's actually grading better and playing better this year than he did last year, even though the stats aren't as good. The passer rating has taken a 10-point hit. The touchdown regression that we expected is all there, but he's actually playing better. That was our preseason prediction. He's going to play better, but he's not going to get the same hype. And he's not getting the same hype in part because the numbers are just pedestrian compared to the rest of the NFL right now. And, of course, you've got your Patrick Mahomes and Jared Goffs of the world that are tearing it up. So
also because they're losing.
Yeah, and also because they're losing. But, with Watson, I think, again, Texans fans, be encouraged that he's playing better. Be discouraged that the rest of the team is not all that good. So I'm taking Houston in this one, though. I'm taking Houston. I think it's going to be a close one. I think it'll be it's not a flashy Sunday night matchup, I don't think, but I think it'll be a pretty good game with Dallas.
Yeah, I'm going with Houston. I think that DeMarcus Lawrence versus Houston offensive line could get ugly, but I think other than that, I'm not terrified by the Dallas defensive front, and, you know, Watson has still been playing well in the face of that.
Oh, so there you have it. Most of us are taking, it's not unanimous, right?
No, we've got Renner's taking Dallas, and Gordon is taking Dallas.
Gordon is also taking Dallas, of course. For the real picks, Pro Football Focus has Green Line. It's all part of your Elite package. You can go get your picks there. And when you sign up for Elite, the best part, you can sign up for Elite to get some Green Line. You can sign up for Elite to get Premium Stats version 2.0. It's the number one football product on the market, Sam. So be sure to go do that. That's the only way to prepare for a weekend of NFL football.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm glad you agree. All right, guys, thanks for tuning in. We'll be back here Monday with our Week 5 recap. Everybody enjoy the weekend's football action. Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.